Welcome everyone to this joint episode of Smart Habits for Translators and Speaking of Translation. I'm Veronica de Michelis.
And I'm Madalena Sanchez-Ampalo.
Yes, welcome everyone. I'm Eve Baudu.
And I'm Corinne McKay. Thanks for joining us.
So in this episode, we'll be discussing a topic that is, or soon will be, on all of our minds, how to handle the winter holidays as a freelancer.
Yeah, this is a topic that we thought our listeners could use some advice about, and I'm going to say, and me too, so I'm excited to hear what everyone has to say. So especially in this very atypical year, and we are looking forward to sharing our thoughts and suggestions with you today.
Yeah, to kick things off, I thought maybe we'd all give a quick update on what's been going on with us. So for myself, I guess, no big surprises, mostly working hard in my York University Glennon College conference interpreting master's program, plus at least some of my usual translation work and getting the Training for Translators class schedule for 21, early 21, all set. Madalena, how about you? What have you been doing?
Well, at the time of recording this, it's about a week or so after the American Translators Association conference, so I'm recovering from that.
Well deserved. It was a huge success.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. It was a fun conference. My first to organize, so I think it went fairly well overall from what I've been hearing. But that's been the big thing this year for me, volunteer-wise. I am about to start a new session, the last session of my 2020 lineup, I guess, of my TNI website blueprint course. And I'm about to start the copywriting for translators course for Training for Translators with Corinne. So that's what's going on in the near future for me. What about you, Eve?
Yeah, so one thing that's kind of fun is that we're on book six for the Global Reads Book Club for Translators that people have heard us talk about before. And I wanted to say, I don't want to tell people what the book is, but it's a fun one. And sign up for the club if you want to know what the book is. So
yes, I'm excited about this one.
Yeah. And then, I felt like we were really hip this time. We got a book that just came out recently. So, on November 21st, I will be speaking at the conference for the Chicago Area Translators and Interpreters Association, and I'll be presenting on ideas about how to maintain your second language. It's their conference, and I'll be one of the speakers. And then also right now, like Madalena said, the time of year, I'm in the middle of a Supercharge Your Second Language Skills Challenge for Training for Translators, Corinne's company. So Veronica, what about you?
Yeah, well, I have a couple of fun translation and localization projects I'm working on, long-term and short-term. I'm also developing two training programs on localization and audiovisual translation. One is for a private client, and another one is for a local college who asked me to develop a program for them. There's a lot of fun things that they're going on with our podcast that we're working on with Madalena, and I'm busy volunteering for my local association in ATA and catching up to all the excellent sessions at ATA conference. That are still available for a few months.
Yeah, I was thinking of that too, trying to do one a week.
Yeah, I need to actually start marking the ones I want to watch, maybe one a week or something. But I totally forgot to mention the podcast. But yes, we're working on the podcast. So first off, maybe we want to give each of us a brief overview of how we normally handle the end of the year holidays, specifically if, wherever you are, you celebrate Christmas, maybe Hanukkah, New Year's, anything coming up that you might take time off for. So for me, mine's not really very clear cut, I would say. It kind of is, but it sort of isn't, because some years, the end of the year is just really busy with my workload. I tend to get a lot of clients, I guess it would be direct clients, who are really trying to use up their budget by the end of the year. So I typically obviously take off December 24th and 25th. Usually also the days after if it falls in the middle of a week, and certainly the 31st and the 1st. But I often work up until the 23rd, even if it's just a half day. Now, if I have nothing on my schedule, then I'll take it off, right? But then I play the rest of the days by ear, just really seeing, what is coming in, I will try to accommodate clients if they come up with something around, you know, the 22nd, 23rd, or even the 28th of December. I'll take that on. It's usually not a big deal, because otherwise things tend to be kind of slower. So I can usually fit something in, unless I've decided, nope, this year I'm just going to take off, you know, the whole week, which sometimes happens. But I also like to use that time of year to plan for the next year a little bit. I know that last year I took an entire, I think it was a half day to do sort of a business retreat of sorts. And I planned for the next year, but especially the next quarter. So like the next 90 days. Yeah. And then early January for me can be a little bit slow, but that's usually kind of short-lived because I start following up with my clients rather quickly after the first week of the year. Well, in past years, we've had family visiting us that first week or so of January, so that works out quite well. But this year, nobody's traveling much. So we'll see. This year's going to be kind of different. Maybe it will be busier. Maybe people will be, you know, getting back to things earlier. I'm not really sure. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting, but that's sort of mine in a nutshell. Corinne, what about you?
Yeah, so I guess talking about this year being a little different, that not only with pandemic travel restrictions, but for my interpreting master's program is through a Canadian university. And so I actually just, this shows how Americans are very American-centric, even when they work in an international industry. I just came to the realization the other day, not only do I not have any days off for Thanksgiving, we even have classes on Thanksgiving Day because it's not a Canadian holiday.
Oh, right. Did you just celebrate Canadian Thanksgiving? I mean, get out of school.
Right. We had the day off for Canadian mm-hmm. Thanksgiving, okay. which I think was our quote unquote Columbus Day.
It was mid-October. Okay.
So my personal thing is I always take the week between Christmas and New Year's completely off, and I try not to even look at the computer. I just put on my autoresponder and take off and usually go skiing. Then online courses always start back up in January, and I do that on purpose because, as Manalita said, it can be that usually is my slowest time of year. Usually around now is my busiest, which is proving to be true again this year. And January, February is the slowest. So the thing I think is really tough to predict is some years translation work has been really, really slow, where I earned like, you know, $1,000 between mid-December and mid-January. But then other years is the opposite. Like one year I remember I actually put an official document translation in the mail when we were on the way out of town on Christmas Eve. So that I think is really tough to predict. And that's one reason why I try to schedule some stuff that is on my own schedule, such as online courses for specifically January and February, because translation work seems to be a little slow. So Veronica, over to you.
Yeah. So last year wasn't typical for me. And I definitely this one won't be either. On a typical year, I take off 2 to 3 weeks, actually, at least 2 last weeks of December and a couple of first days in January, if not the whole first week of January. We usually visit our family in France and Russia, or they come over here to visit us. Now we follow the kids' school holidays too. So that's our limitation in that sense. And last year we decided not to travel for Christmas and stay here, hoping that we would have a big family reunion in Europe this summer, which didn't happen. And we can't travel this Christmas either. So last year in December, I took on a very, very large project that I knew actually I started in November that I knew would keep me busy all through December and January. And so I chose to only take a few days off and then worked through the holidays, which was great money wise, but I felt really burnt out after it. And I plan not to do that this year, even though we can't travel. I really want to unplug completely for at least a week, if not 2 weeks. And my criteria for whether I'm sufficiently unplugged or not is if I can remember the password for my computer. So back to my email, you know, so hopefully I'll unplug. I also teach part-time for a local college in their translation program. And sometimes my class is scheduled for mid-January. So that means I may have to start working right after New Year's Eve to get ready for the classes. But for next year, I know that my first class is in March. So that's great. That's really helpful to me to plan my holidays. Eve, what about you?
Yeah, so kind of similar to you guys, where I do try to get some unplugging, and I feel like it's really important not to get burnt out during that time. And that, you know, in the culture that I live in, that those are big holidays. So Thanksgiving is really, I grew up in a big family, and Thanksgiving has always been really important to me. So we try to, you know, I do try to do nothing on that. And for those of you who don't necessarily know, or some of our listeners, if you live in another country, Thanksgiving's on a Thursday, and so that, you know, creates this long weekend for Americans that we don't have as many as those, like the big bridge or whatever that they call it in France. And then I think, like Madalena was saying, I try to make sure I take up you know, the few days around Christmas, the few days around New Year's, like the day before. And then also I had made notes, and then you mentioned it too, Veronica, about now I actually still follow somewhat the school vacation schedule, because I have a college student who's taking online classes because of the pandemic, but mainly the schedule of my high schooler, who is only doing online school, but is very busy every day attending classes, taking it seriously, doing all his homework. You know, even though it's online, he seems to be adapting well. And so we'll probably follow his schedule again, about, you know, I'll just work up until he's not working anymore either. And then about travel, yes, my family and I often travel to Alaska, where I'm originally from, for the holiday. And we considered it even this year, but they originally started in the pandemic with like 18 a day of cases, and now they have 500 a day. And so, and then when you go there, you have to quarantine, because it's kind of out, you know, out of the way of the regular United States. And so they were kind of trying to protect the area. But anyway, so we won't be doing that this year. So, but I may be traveling around Colorado just with my own little pod, which is my own immediate family, which is my two sons and my husband. So we may do some traveling around Colorado. I don't know. And yeah, I don't, yeah, just like you guys said, I try to take as many days off, and it's usually pretty slow, but my email's on my phone, so I do see if something comes in, you know, and I can decide if I want to take it or not. So, yeah. Cool.
Great. So, Veronica, here's a question for you. Especially for beginning freelancers, the holidays can actually be a good time to look for work, because a lot of clients' regular translators might be on vacation. So what ideas would you have for our listeners who are maybe on the newer end of the spectrum, and how they might use the holidays to advantage?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say number one is to actively reach out to agency clients and let them know that you're available during the holidays, and clearly state your schedule, what days you're available, and your output, like how many words are you able to translate or edit per day. And bonus points if you have a trusted colleague, because I know some agencies really appreciate that you have someone you've worked with, and that you have an editor, or like a trusted editor you've worked with. So I would say let the agencies know if you have a trusted editor who is available too, and say, hey, we're, you know, a translator and an editor, and here are our resumes, and here's our availability. And that worked really well for me in the past. And I would say put it in the subject of your email, like certified Spanish to English translator available from December 20th through December 31st, or something
Oh, that's a really good
idea.
So
it really stands out, not just, you know, Spanish to English translator, but really the availability too, because that'll stand out. And then you might send an email, or follow up with a phone call, or like a LinkedIn message if you don't hear back. And I really want to stress the LinkedIn message part, because I see a lot of people still connect with people they don't know without sending them a message. And that's going to achieve an opposite effect, I think. So if you do want to follow up, make sure you include a message to your connection request or anything like that. Another idea, if you are on LinkedIn, you could write a brief post about your availability, maybe some topics you specialize in, and just add to your colleagues, if you have them in your network, that you would appreciate referrals and people sharing your post. I feel like it's sort of hush-hush, like, oh, I don't have enough work, or I'm looking for work. I would say make it clear that you're available, that you are willing to take tests, or you have translation samples. And especially this year, I saw that the LinkedIn community really came together virtually, and people were sharing each other's posts and such, helping people find work, helping people find clients, and so on. So I would do that. And even even if you're like a member of a local association or you're in any other groups online where you have colleagues, just mentioning that you're available and you're looking actively looking for work in that holiday period, and asking people to share and maybe send referrals if they're comfortable with that. And another idea for people who may be looking for either local clients, whether agency or direct clients, is to look at, say, Nextdoor or a local Facebook group. And I've seen that a lot this year too, where people are really looking for local businesses to support. And you could post in the Nextdoor group or in a Facebook group that is local to your area, saying something like, hey, I'm a local translator from Spanish into English. And if you're lucky enough to be able to travel this holiday season and need documents translated for your trip, or if you are putting documents together for a work or student visa and need my help, I'm available throughout December. Here's my email. I would be happy to help. And an extra tip that I have is to take a few minutes to create a Google business page, whether or not you have a website. I've come to realize that a lot of clients often look for translation services on the go. And interpreting services for that matter too. They would use their phone or their tablet or any other device. Mm-hmm. And Google business pages rank pretty high in search results. They show on the map, and Google also shows businesses that are currently open. So if you set up your business hours on the back end of your Google business page and specify that you are indeed open between Christmas and New Year's Eve, that can help bring clients to you.
Oh, what a great idea.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I got tons of ideas.
I know. Thank you, Veronica.
Yeah. I don't even want to work over the holidays, and I got tons of just general marketing ideas.
Yeah. That does work really well, by the way. Mm. Google business pages. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have a question for all of you. You know, putting aside what the calendar says, how do you determine that you need to take some time off? And how do you make sure that you really stick to what you promised yourself and don't sneak off to work a little bit now and then? So how about you, Corinne?
Yeah, so I think first I would answer that from the mindset point of view, that you have to remember that even I live in a state where one of the slogans is don't forget to play. And so to me, I think, you know, on one side of the coin, I am a huge believer in the value of breaks and non-work time. And I think a lot of the, you know, big realizations that I've come to about my business and my career have been when I've taken time away from work. But on the other hand, you have people who say, you know, work is the main thing I enjoy doing in life, and I don't feel like I need a break from it. So I think first, you know, examine your own mindset. But if you decide that you need or want some holiday time, I think you need to do three things. Number one, find a trusted colleague who is working over the holidays. Number two, inform all clients that you will be taking this vacation. And number three, give them the trusted colleague's contact and put that person's contact on your autoresponder. So for example, last winter, you know, I mean, Eve and I work a lot together, but sadly, we both like to go skiing often together. So I can't really put Eve on there, but last winter break, I found a trusted colleague, Beth Smith, who had recently passed the ATA French to English exam and who I really trust. And so around December 15th, I emailed all of my clients and said, you know, I'll be on vacation completely from December 24th through January 2nd. My trusted colleague, Beth Smith, is available. Here's her contact information. And then on my autoresponder, I said, you know, my office is closed for vacation. Should you have an urgent translation, please contact Beth Smith at, you know, and then gave her contact information. Mm-hmm. So I think you set it up so that you basically can't, I don't want to say you can't work, but you set it up so that you're not thinking, oh, this client, you know, I didn't expect them to contact me on January 28th, but now they did. Will you tell them ahead of time that you're not working? Mm-hmm. So, Madalena. Yeah. Over to you. How do Southern Californians handle this?
Well, you know, it's sunny here year round too. So we like to get outdoors as much as possible as well. But I'm one of those people who I do really enjoy working. I'm always coming up with ideas for my work, and it's just something I really do enjoy. But I also have learned, and we've talked about this on our podcast and probably among all of us here, that taking time away is also productive. And I think that nobody questions employees when they have their time off. So why are we questioning freelancers? Mm-hmm. Or if you are questioning taking time off as a freelancer, I guess I should put it that way. But one thing that I do, and I usually don't tell a lot of people this, but here we go. I don't have my email on my phone anymore. I took it off probably about a year ago because it's just too much. I get so many emails that I just was always connected. So I've taken that off completely. So that's not a distraction on my phone. Also I have my home office, which is pretty much out of the way from the rest of the house. So I've actually worked with, Dorte Rosette this year with, her productivity, and leadership training. And she mentioned to me another trick is to, decide that you're only going to work on work related or volunteer related or whatever it is related to, you know, I guess not free time, in a specific place. So since I already don't have my email on my phone, she said, you know, well, if you're going to work on, you know, responding to clients or other colleagues, volunteering, whatever it is, determine that you're going to do that in your office so that when you leave your office, you're stepping away. Yeah, it's sort of a cue to step away.
Yep.
But because I like to do so many things, I'm interested in so many things, I do well if when planning time off, I also kind of make a plan for some things that I want to do. So maybe it's, you know, like you all are very outdoorsy in Colorado. Maybe it's going for a hike here or checking out a new area of Southern California that we haven't been to yet. I constantly have a stack of books that I want to read, you know, things like that. I sort of need something to do. So that's been helpful for me. But also I try to do something similar to what you all have already said. I let people know beforehand when I'm taking time off. So that sort of sets people up for the expectation that I will not be responding right away. So I think that's important. And also when I do that, when I set my auto response and I let people know, I mark something on my calendar for when I am going to be back in the office to follow up with people and say, hey, you know, I'm back. Hope you had a good break as well. You know, something along those lines, just to check in. And that reminds them that, oh yeah, she's back now and I can email her. Or if I have a project that she would be a fit for, that's right, I can call on her again. Because I think that's something, I think Veronica and I've sort of talked about. It seems like when you take even a short break, clients start to work with, you know, maybe some other translators that they tend to work with or something. And then they forget, oh yeah, it was only a week you were gone, so I can email you again. So I always set a date so that when I come back, I don't forget to follow up with people. So that's what I do. So yeah. What about you, Eve?
Yeah. You guys had great ideas. So I, just to, I don't know what else I can add. I try to modulate my own work day so that I don't get burned out. Cause I used to work a lot more into the evenings, which I do once in a while now if I have to, which I had to do last night actually, but I don't really do that hardly ever anymore. Veronica, your original question, you'd said, how do we try to avoid,
I think, just, yeah, sneaking off to work. Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't get burned out on a daily basis. I'm better than that than I used to be. And the thing Madalena mentioned too is I do have, as I mentioned, I do have my email on my phone, but what I do when I really want to break is I leave it behind. And we're trying to train our kids to do that too. Because my sons, some of you might have heard before, play the piano really well. And I'm telling them, you know, when you're focusing on that task, when you're focusing on that creation kind of in a way, right, playing the piano, I said, I don't want you to be distracted by your phone. So set it aside. So I try to follow that same advice and hide it from myself. So I, yeah. And then, I also do use the trick of only working on work in my office. You know, I have a really nice office, and so I feel like I don't really work around my house otherwise, unless sometimes maybe with the pandemic we want a break or something, but I try to do my work in my office. And then another thing I've been doing for myself is I've been purposely scheduling in time for reading as a little mini, you know, break or whatever. So if in the past 6 months, and I've really been pleased for my own self how that is helping me to kind of disconnect. And also I think I've mentioned before too, I keep a book diary where I write down everything I've read in like the last 25 years since I was two.
That's right.
And
since I was two.
And so, but what I really have liked about that is that I did notice I really have been able to read a lot more. And in the last, you know, 5 months or whatever, I'm like, oh wow! In August I read this many books. In September I read this many books. So that proving it to myself that it was a good good tack to take. And then I also do use the autoresponder when I really feel like I need a break. It just, even for me, for example, during the ATA conference, yes, I was sitting in my office doing the conference online, but I didn't want to, for myself, I didn't want to feel like I was pressuring myself that I had to answer people because I was sitting in front of my email. And I know a lot of people did this too for the conference. And so even not just the conference, but other times, I feel like, if I set my auto reply and I put the information in there, then I don't feel that I take the pressure away from myself to have to reply. You know, I think, okay, well, I can probably reply in 2 hours and it'll be fine. And normally I might reply in 5 minutes, you know, but because I told them I was not available right then, I feel freer to let myself still relax a little bit.
Great. So another roundtable question here. What do you send clients and colleagues as holiday gifts? So my sort of go-to item is holiday wreaths. And for any of our listeners who don't live in the U.S. or aren't native English speakers, that's W-R-E-A-T-H. that is like pine tree branches sort of arranged in a decorative shape. And maybe you put some like ribbons or other decorations on it. And a lot of people in the U.S. hang them on their front door or somewhere on their house during the holidays. So I order those to be delivered in early December. And that way, I think it achieves a few objectives. It doesn't get mixed up with everyone else's gifts at mid end of December. They're not something that sticks around, so it's not something that you have to keep forever. And I also wonder if people just get burned out on holiday food as well. So I've had pretty good success with those. People seem to really like them. And I would say I do probably my top four clients and then any colleagues who referred me for a substantial translation job and then my online course instructors. So I probably send out, 10 total of those. And I also am a big believer in handwritten cards. Mm. Last year, I don't know what was going on with me, but I had this huge burst of energy. I ordered and sent a handwritten card to everyone who took a class through Training for Translators, which was like 285 wow. people. And this year is going to be more. But people loved them. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe how many people put like a picture of the card on Twitter or emailed me to tell me that they got it. So I actually think I'm going to do that again, but I need to get on it. Mm-hmm. So except this year, maybe it'll be like a dumpster fire graphic for 2020, yeah. something like that, something 2020 themed.
Corinne, are you going to send the 900 plus people who took the free course you
made? No, I know. For anybody who didn't, participate in that, I did a free session of getting started as a freelance translator, and 900 people signed up for it. And no, I'm not going to do that. Partially because I don't have the stamina. And then also, you know, what really actually adds up is the international postage. Mm-hmm. Mm. So from the U.S., it's like more than $1 to send an international letter. And I believe that of those, 300-ish people last year, almost half were international. So I think the cards were about $200 and the postage was about $300. The postage was more than the cards. But personally, I'll just put this out there. I don't see a whole lot of value in e-cards unless it's something really unique. Like the colleague who I mentioned, Beth Smith, she actually does this really cool video of her like year in review, like conferences that she went to and highlight projects. And to be honest, I always look forward to receiving that, but just a sort of standard blasted e-card, I don't know that I see a ton of value in those.
Like, but
Eve, how about
unless it was super personalized or something. Yeah. So, okay. I don't know, guys. I can't compete with Corinne, overachiever in holiday stuff. but I do have what I think is a really wonderful illustrated book on translation that I send to clients and colleagues. It talks about translating untranslatables, so that's good, and that are very culturally specific, and that there's very culturally specific words and phrases that really speak to the way that a specific culture looks at the world, and it has really fun pictures. And so I always really like to, so it's different people I send that. And I do try to send cards, but I usually do it for New Year's because I don't, not that you said you were doing this, Corinne, but just saying what my thinking is for my approach is that I don't like to send them for Christmas for a couple of reasons, is that I usually don't have time for all the work and personal stuff that's going on. And then I also just like it to be more neutral. So I send it for New Year's.
And I guess that's something maybe we should pause on that for our listeners who are outside of the U.S., is that I think in some countries, it's totally acceptable to send Merry Christmas cards and things like that, which in the U.S., I mean, I guess it depends a little bit on where you live. Yeah. But in the U.S., I would say is somewhat culturally not appropriate
that we
generally say like Happy Holidays, or I just do Happy New Year, to be honest, because I feel like that's something everybody can get on board with, that I just say, I mean, especially this year. Good riddance 2020.
Right, right. Well, and I also feel like business-wise, you know, you can say like, we're looking forward to, having all
prosperous
of us a new productive
year.
Or
yeah,
prosperous
right.
new year. Yeah, it seems a little more. But I'm sure in some industries, you know, I don't know what, but maybe this Merry Christmas is more appropriate. I mean, and anybody, I'm happy to get those cards from people too, a Merry Christmas card, just if anybody wants to send me one. But for my own self, I'm just more comfortable sending out the New Year card. So Veronica, what about you?
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, in Russia, our Christmas is early January. So if you were to like say Merry Christmas to someone in December, they would be like, okay, that's a little early. But I mean, yeah. So I generally shoot for like the end of the year and also try to make it neutral and just say happy holidays or say something along the lines of, you know, really appreciated working with you this year and here's to a prosperous new year or something like that. I like to send small candles that are really like, you know, artisanal made, or maybe some sort of specialty thing that is a small producer, someone either local or like a small shop that I either found or someone recommended to me and I liked. There is a great little tea shop here in Katy, Texas, where I live. They make this cute packages of very specialty tea that
Oh my gosh, you sent me that tea and it was so good.
Thank you.
I just want to put it out there, if Veronica sends you that tea,
drink it up.
Drink it.
Yeah.
Because I'm not even like, I am a diehard coffee person and I loved
same,
that tea.
Same here.
That's good to hear. Thank you.
And I love your idea about candles too. That's a really wonderful one.
Yeah, thanks. And I think Madalena sent me a candle that was I think it was called Wildflower or something. And I think you mentioned something along the lines of like my logo is a bluebonnet because that's a Texas flower. And so I tried that candle that was called Wildflower or something. And I was like, wow, that's awesome. So I ordered more from that little shop and used that for holiday gifts 1 year. Yeah. So my go-to is tea because it's also a Russian thing. And I would typically mention something that, you know, Russians love tea. And I hope you enjoy this tea from Texas, Katy, Texas, or something like this. I also sent little fridge magnets 1 year. I think I found something Russian looking. It was like a matryoshka doll or something about Texas to clients, especially overseas. I have some clients in Europe and they typically think it's really cool. You know, oh, it's from Texas. And I do like handwritten cards. I either send the card with my logo that I printed that, you know, has my contact information and such and just sign the back or use a holiday card, like a handwritten thing. Madalena, how about you?
Yeah, I tend to send something a little bit different every year because some of my clients have been sending them gifts now for several years. And I don't know about you guys, but do you ever have like that family aunt who like sends everybody the same box of like... assorted like baked goods or something every year, and you're like, oh, we have to eat
for
you're like, we have to eat this again this year, you know. So I don't want to be that person who sends the same thing every year, so I usually change it every year. And some years I do branded type of gifts where it's got like my company logo on it or something, and it's usually something practical that they can use. This year I'm doing branded notebooks and mugs, but in other years I've done food. So there's, you know, like a brownie company that I was able to order just like a nice huge box set of brownies where they could share it around the office. Well, people aren't doing that so much this year, obviously, because a lot of people are still working from home. So I was trying to think of something practical people could use. Another year I did a different type of branded mug, but I went and picked up all sorts of like international little like chocolates and nuts and things like that, that people could enjoy, like kind of like snack type foods, and put them in the mug and sent it, you know, all wrapped up like that. But I do tend to send, sort of like Corinne, to probably, I think last year I sent to maybe 12 clients. But usually it's not more than that. That's actually a higher number than typical. It depends on how much I work with them and things like that, not to the, you know, one-offs here and there, but and to colleagues as well. I agree on the e-cards. I'm not a fan of the e-cards at all. So I try to do the handwritten note if I'm sending it from me. Like obviously if you're ordering it and getting it shipped directly, that's a little more difficult, but some companies will do handwritten notes in there for you. And then one thing I did last year for a few colleagues, I don't know if you all have seen this, but it's becoming more popular, where you can order sort of like a boxed gift where you can set the amount that you want to spend, and then you get to choose various things to put into the box that you think that they would like.
Oh, that's cool. So you can just say, like, I want to spend $40 or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Hmm. And oftentimes, too, if it's your first order, you get a discount on your first order anyway. So I think the one I think I used last year, it's called Box Fox or something like that. Anyway, that one was fun, and I got, and they have really nice things too. So if you kind of know the person sort of well too, like if it's a colleague, you can send things that you know that they would really enjoy. And then one thing that I've started doing this year, when, and this is not just during holidays, but you could do it during the holidays, is sending people something with their own logo on it. This is typically easier to do with colleagues, because, you know, with clients, it kind of makes sense when you put your own branding on something. But for colleagues, I've been doing that, and people really appreciate it. When they get something in the mail, they're like, oh, I should have thought of this for my own business, you know, and then they have something of theirs. I think this year I did mugs for people who refer clients to me, you know, like big clients to me. So I would send them a thank you with like a mug with their own logo on it that they could use every day. So that's, you know, something small, but the type of thing that people, I like to give gifts, I guess, that people are going to either love it, to eat it, or to use it. So something like that. Yeah.
When you mentioned giving things over, different things over the years, one thing that I can't do anymore, but I used to do, was give CDs of French music that I liked to clients.
Oh,
but
that's,
you know,
nice. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't do that anymore because nobody wants their buy CDs. And I also wish that they would still do CDs so I could give them for teenage boys' birthday presents, but that doesn't work either.
Yeah.
But another person I was thinking of that has really good, I always call her the swag queen, is Jen Mercer. Mm-hmm. Always has interesting things. I think one of the things you mentioned, she sometimes has made little daytimer books or little leather daytimer.
Like the tiny, she had those tiny notebooks at the ATA conference one year. And I think translators are one contingent that actually uses mm-hmm. tiny notebooks.
Cool.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then Sam Mowry, too, has like given wonderful chocolates and things like that that come to mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I'm like Eve, too. If I don't get my act together in December or early, I don't want it to get like lost in the mail. So I'll do it at the new year when people are sort of not expecting it. So it's kind of a surprise. But
yeah.
So how do you all let your clients and colleagues know about your time off? We sort of talked about this a little bit, but what do you do to prepare for taking that time off? Like with your emails, your out of office responses, your to-do list. I think that's always the big thing for me I'm concerned about. And, you know, maybe finding a colleague to take over some work, which we've talked about a little bit too. As far as for me, I really like to let people know that I'm taking time off, and I set that auto response. Like that's on my to-do list the last day of work before I take a break for sure, because I want to make sure that it's there and that people know. But I think for me, the bigger thing is the to-do list, because there are certain things I want to get done before I go on a break. So I try to prioritize that list and make sure that what's on it has to be done, and not just something that's nice to get done. If I get to those things that are nice to get done, that's great. But if not, and it can wait until after I get back, then I'm not going to, like, you know, bend over backwards to try to finish everything like that, because that's just stressful. But I think one thing I like to think about doing is, you know, considering how I would like to start working when I get back. And usually that means low stress. So what can I do to set myself up so that when I get back, it's a little smoother? Because that's always the hard part when you come back from a break. It's like getting back into work. So like I said, I'll put reminders on my calendar for the day that I get back, or a couple days later, to do, you know, like I said, follow up with clients or colleagues, say, hey, I'm back. Hope you had a good break. Yeah. And that's really mostly what I try to get done. But I can't think of anything else right off the cuff. So what about you, Corinne?
Yeah, so I think I talked a little bit about my approach before with finding the trusted colleague and even putting their information on my autoresponder. I think another thing to think about is to what extent do the sectors or industries you translate for shut down or not? So I would say, I mean, I don't really translate for any sectors or industries where they're sort of working like gangbusters over the holidays. And my clients in Europe will start emailing me around December 12th and ask, like, are you still working? I mean, they definitely take the holiday vacation thing a little more seriously than we do in the US. And on the other end of the spectrum, if you work in a sector like, let's say, financial reporting, maybe, you know, the end of December is the end of the month, the end of the quarter, and the end of the year. So you need to really think about your strategy, you know, and or maybe not take that time off and then take off some time in January. So I think when you go about it, I think the first step would be to think, how disruptive will it be to my clients that I am not working? And my answer for myself would be not very disruptive at all. So mostly I just need to inform them. Using that strategy I mentioned before. But Veronica, how about you?
Yeah, I agree with that. And I like to let my clients know that I'm planning to take time off like a couple of weeks in advance. You typically tell them mid-December that if I am unavailable, like the week of Christmas and the last week of December too, just so, and that usually I feel like it buys me some days where I know it's quiet because they may think, oh, like she's the moment you tell them, they may think, oh, she's already off on vacation or something. When I set my autoresponder, I usually put the like return date is like the day after I actually start working so that I have a quiet day when people still think I'm away, but I'm really just catching up on
stuff.
Planning my to-do list and such.
I'm like, why don't I do that?
And I learned that trick in my corporate days because that's when you come back to the office and you really have to, you know, dig up that you know, inbox and see what new things you have to do and what happened while you were gone. So yeah, I like to do that now too as a freelancer, just it's a white lie, you know, I'm really at the office, but I'm not really working yet. I'm not accepting new projects. I'm just planning out. I feel like the to-do list is my biggest issue because there's always something either ongoing or like things I chose not to finish up when I take time off. So I started putting, and instead of having that on paper, I'll just put the tasks in Asana and I'll set the date, either the deadline or the date when I want to start doing it, like after the holidays, so that when I leave my desk, it's clean, it's empty. There's no like to-do list or post-it notes on it that are like visually distracting and just feel like, oh, I have to get this done first, so, because it may not be the most urgent thing on your list. And I love the tip about finding a colleague or two to take over some work. I did that last year and the year before and it worked really great and really helped me sort of detach from that thinking, oh, there's work to do. There's always work to do. There's never like a good time to take time off. And what I also do is I'll tell a few of my best friends and I'll tell my family, including my little kids, that I am taking time off. And I'll tell them I'm taking 2 weeks off or like a week off, and I'll let them police me if they see me sneaking back into the office or like checking email or doing anything that looks like work. My kids especially are really good about it and tell me, well, mommy, you told us you're taking time off. So that helps me stay on track. Eve, what about you?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about autoresponder. Like everybody kind of mentioned, I always make sure that I do it in French and in English, and so that whatever my most likely types of clients can read it. And then I also do what you do, Veronica. I've done that for a long time. Extend the day when I return. Like I'm really back, but I usually put an extra day so that I can answer if I want to, but but that I have an extra day to catch up and feel comfortable getting back to work, you know, and feel like I'm ready to face the world the next day after I said I was coming back. And then I keep my to-do list on paper. I've talked about that before. I just, everything else I do, I'm, you know, very computer savvy or whatever, but I just haven't, the way my mind works or something, I've just never been able to translate my to-do list to electronic. And I've tried to do that many times in different things, like with, like you said, Asana or what's that one called? To-do list or different things. But so it's analog. So I make sure that I take it with me. And I also take a photo of it as a backup. So, and the main reason is that kind of what Madalena had mentioned a little bit earlier was when I my mind is still always working, even though if I'm working on, you know, ideas might pop into my head for a new marketing way or some idea I have for my business. And so then I will, or something I want to do. So I'll write that down on the to-do list. And the reason I do that too is not that I'm working, but then it frees my mind up not to have to worry about it for me. Because I think I'd worry like, I'm going to forget. What am I going to do? I won't remember that. So then I have the my to-do list or my idea list with me, and I write it down, and then I'm free to move on and not think about it again until I go back to work. And also, yeah, I like to have it, you know, like you said, ready to go, so that when I am back to work, then I'm back on track and covering the ideas that I wanted to cover. So that's what I had to add on that.
So, Madalena, we've heard you mention before the idea of post-holiday marketing. This was like a revelation. I saw you talk about this. Contacting regular clients again in early to mid-January, sort of ping and nudge them, and also trying to set up some new marketing habits for yourself. So maybe you want to tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. First of all, I want to say that I guess I missed the memo on not letting people know that you're back on that first day that you're really back. I need to start doing that and like, you know, because I do. I come back on the day of and then I'm like, oh, there's so much to do. Yeah, that's a really smart thing. I'm going to start doing that, setting it for a day later. But yeah, so what I like to do after I'm back, and this for me, if we're talking about end of year, it would definitely be around mid-January. I like to give everybody, you know, a couple of weeks to get back into the groove of their own work, because I find that if you try to contact people too early in January, and this is a bit of a tip, by the way, to translators and interpreters everywhere, because I get a lot of emails from independent contractors because I hire a lot of them. I get emailed like January 2nd. Sometimes even January 1st. And I'm a little bit surprised that people think that they're going to get a response to some of these in a way. And I'm not saying that to be, you know, like nasty, but I think a lot of people are so inundated with what they need to do after they've taken time off that that's just going to get lost. So I try to give people a couple of weeks to kind of get back into their own routine and groove. And by then, probably their children have gone back to school if they have kids at home, like various things, you know, and people are, you know, sort of feeling energetic, optimistic about a new year and so on. And so I like to follow up with people and say, hey, I hope you had a great break. This is typically with regular clients, but I also do it with colleagues. I'm excited for this new year. I hope you are too, something like that. And, you know, here's what I'll be working on. And I'm excited to start working with you again this year and hope it's a successful one for you. Something along those lines, to where it lets them know that I'm available, but it doesn't say, hey, send me work, send me work. Because I do get a lot of emails that are like that. So I've always found like, what's the nicest way to kind of subtly say, hey, I'm here if you need me. So that's something I do, but I also like to, like I said, at the end of a year, and sometimes this doesn't happen until maybe the first week of January, depends on, like if we're traveling or not, then my sort of half day retreat might be, you know, determining what my regular marketing, plan will be to start off the new year. And I try to turn that into a habit of sorts. So, I think about that in advance because I, you know, if you're going to try to set yourself up for success, it doesn't usually work if you just try to throw yourself into it without some kind of plan. So I say, okay, well, each day, weekday, I'm going to, you know, email this many new potential clients or something like that, or follow up with this many clients. Or if I'm raising my rates, I will say, you know, I'm going to send those after I've checked in with them maybe a week later or something like that, or whatever it is. But I need to write certain things down to, I think it's sort of recording it in my mind in a way, but also to get it on the calendar. And I use Asana. I think a lot of people know that already. But that kind of keeps track of, you know, the sense of marketing as a project, and it sets reminders and things like that. So I kind of get all of that set up. It makes it easier to fall into the habit of regular marketing after the new year. And it becomes a task for each day. So it's sort of like, you know, you can either make that one of your top, you know, tasks. I usually pick three big things I want to make sure get done. And then the rest are things that do need to get done, but may not be as urgent. But if it is something that you really want to form a habit, for me, I try to do that for a few weeks, just making sure that that's one of the top things I do each day, and do it first thing. So that has helped to try to just get that out of the way. And then when you start to do it regularly, you see that it's really just something that should be a regular habit anyway. We make it a much bigger deal than it tends to be. And it's a good thing to get into the habit of just doing, reaching out to new clients, getting back in touch with clients maybe you haven't heard from or worked with in a while. I think I did this in Corinne, in your March Marketing Madness group, was reaching back out to clients you haven't talked to in a while. And I will say that that is one of the best ways to get work quickly, because that always works for me. Not with every client, of course, I'm not saying that, but I mean, just in that one group, I told Corinne, I was like, I just scored a new project that was like $1,500 and took an email of 2 minutes, you know, right. It's that type of a thing.
Yeah. I think that's like one of the most effective and most overlooked marketing strategies that everybody wants to get on board with a new idea and with something a little bit sexier than, you know, remind a dormant client that you exist. But honestly, every year in my March Marketing Madness group, when I tell people, like, if you have very little time or energy for this, just nudge dormant clients, and people are, I mean, nearly almost everyone gets work from it. And some people will come back and be like, I just got a $2,500 project. I just got a $1,300 project, you know? Yeah. So thumbs up to that.
Yeah, definitely. And sometimes it just takes a small reminder. And I think when I talk to other translators about this, a lot of people think, well, I don't want to bother anybody, or I don't want to seem desperate, but that's not what it's about. I mean, you're not emailing them to say, hey, do you have work for me? Right. You're really emailing them to check in with them. And if you do make it more of like, this is a business relationship, a partnership, I'm just, you know, seeing how you're doing. And maybe you also fill them in on what you're working on, or the new areas of your business you're looking to develop, that, you know, if you're being strategic about it, has something to do with what they do. And then it tends to just flow from there.
So many great tips. That's awesome. So to wrap up, what do you all like to do to sort of close the year and get ready for the new one? Do you have any routines or traditions that you like to do? Something like doing a year in review exercise, or planning out the upcoming year in any way. For example, I like to flip through my planner. Like for this year, I will flip through my planner and see what I actually plans to achieve this year, which will be very sad, and what I accomplished. But I do like sort of flipping through the planner to get a visual reminder of any important milestones that I may have forgotten about, or even little things like day-to-day things that are nice to remember. And then I give myself a couple of days to sort of digest that information, and then I start planning out the next year or the next quarter. And one thing I really like to do every year, either like the day before New Year's Eve or early January, and I talked about it in one of the episodes of our podcast, is I like to pick one goal for various areas of my life. I'll pick like one goal for family or kids or hobbies or health and exercise, and just write down one thing, if nothing else, what do I want this one thing to be this year, and then look back at what I wrote the previous year and see how that went. So what about you, Eve?
Yeah, I think one thing I've been trying to do the last couple of years is set a specific goal for myself for just, I mean, it could be lots of different things, but I have an idea for a kind of a new piece of my business that I'm setting a goal for at the end of this year to start that next year. And so I just think for me, that kind of, you know, okay, yeah. 2020 especially is coming to a close, or the year is coming to a close. And that kind of gives me motivation that I, you know, other times I might keep pushing it off, but then I think, okay, there's this really draconian line in the sand, which is the end of the year. And then, you know, I can plan this for the next year, a real specific task, not just kind of general. And I also do like to, I'm sure like many of us do, to review my financials, as I do throughout the year too, but kind of review those and then compare those to past years too, and to think about, you know, how can I address, you know, either gaps or congratulate myself for having either had the financial aspect having gone up or down throughout the year. So what about you, Madalena?
It's interesting. I do the sort of wrap up of the year in the sense of like also planning for the next year. So I do similarly to look back at what went well this year, what didn't go well, what did I plan to do? Was it, if it didn't work out, was it something in my control or not? And I think for a lot of people, they'll say that it wasn't in their control, a lot of the things that maybe didn't happen this year. But then I look and see, okay, well, if it didn't work out, did I pivot and do something different? Because that's something I think is very important. You know, anybody who's a freelance business owner needs to be able to pivot if they can. But I also, when I'm setting my plans for the next year, sometimes I will, if I'm, you know, if I do it early enough by the end of the year, I'll start working on one of those at least before the year ends, because I like to start the year with some momentum. And that way too, I don't feel like that sort of new year overwhelm that a lot of people feel if they're starting something brand new. It'll feel more like a continuation of something that's already going well, if that makes any sense, mm-hmm. or hopefully it's going well. Mm. Yeah. So I try to do that. But I also I tend to be somebody who likes to do a lot of things. So I try to spread out whatever I can and say, okay, maybe this isn't that important for the first quarter, but maybe I want to start doing this in the second quarter. So I'll just, you know, get it out there so that in the first quarter I can do any kind of preparation work for whatever is coming in the next quarter. So I kind of try to do that as much as possible. What about you, Corinne?
Yeah. So I think, I agree with a lot of the tips that you guys gave. And I think the main thing I try to do is set a financial and a non-financial goal in my business. So financial might be total income, but it also might be something like increase the percentage of my income that comes mm-hmm. from interpreting, something like that. And then something that doesn't have to do with money as well. Like Eve said, you know, think about a new facet of my business or work with a different type of client. And I think I deal better with simpler stuff. Like I feel like I need to make sort of a negative goal list because my problem is wanting to do all the things. And so I think sometimes I, you know, not like actually making a list of things to not work on, but to say, really focus on this, you know, this income goal and this non-financial goal. And that really helps me. And I think I'm going to implement your idea, Madalena, of like a business retreat with myself. And, you know, especially this year, because even going somewhere minimally could be really exciting because we don't go anywhere anymore. Yeah. That even, you know, doing something pretty minimal could really jazz up the beginning of the year planning mm-hmm. process.
We have an episode on that, in fact.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it looks like we're about out of time for this episode, but thanks for joining us in this special collaborative episode of Smart Habits for Translators and Speaking of Translation. This was really fun.
It was really fun. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. And we hope you'll subscribe to Speaking of Translation and Smart Habits for Translators on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This was so much fun. You can also find more information and our past episodes on our websites, smarthabitsfortranslators.com and speakingoftranslation.com.
And if you like our podcasts, we would love it if you would leave us a review wherever you listen, and we will talk to you again soon.